Hi, I'm Danny. I'm an alcoholic.
Oh, this is a hazard. I talk a lot with my hands, so I'm going to go poof. I'm really nervous automatically. I just always have to pee my pants when I first get up here. I don't know why that is. It just automatically happens. My sobriety date, January 2nd, 2007. I have a home group. I sponsor others, and I have a sponsor, which keep me accountable here. And I've always been taught to say that in the beginning and make sure I do those things on a daily basis. My story is like a lot of others here, you know. I grew up in Tampa, not like a lot of others here, because we're pretty unique. So Tampanian, born and raised, lived here pretty much all my life, good and bad. I always thought, like, when I got sober, you know, for the first time, or the only time I got sober, that I'd have to get away, you know, from Tampa, because there's just too much here, too many memories, you know, can't do it. Oh, and but there's a lot of really great memories, and I've met a lot of great people here. But my story goes like this. I was raised here. I was a lot like Alexis, have a loving mother and father. One was unfortunately alcoholic, so he was a little crazed, you know, at times. We were like the perfect, you know, family, you know, for a lot, you know, to the outside world. You know, we dressed really nice. I had a little sister. She was, she's probably about 4 years younger than I am, and my mom used to dress us up with the same outfit all the time. It'd be like this little blue flower thing, me and then this, you know, other little girl with blue flowers. You know, we'd go to church because we both went to Catholic school, so we were, you know, trying to do the right thing, raise the right way, and then they'd get home and there'd be like these crazy like fights, you know, my dad, and I didn't know what that was, like I didn't know my dad was a drunk, you know, I just knew that, oh, mommy and daddy just hate each other, you know, like they're just crazy running around trying to, you know, wrestle, you know? and that wasn't the case, you know, and I remember like, you know, thinking as a child, like, God, I can't wait till they get divorced. You know, like, this really sucks for me. And I'm just selfish and self-centered from the very beginning. Not that my mom's, like, you know, going through all this pain and her husband's, you know, like a bad husband. But, I mean, it's me, you know. It's my life. Like, you're affecting me. And I'm just selfish from the very get-go. And so I remember telling my mom, like, you know, around 11 years old, it's about time that we divorce Dad. You know, like, it's really good. Getting too much for us, you know, and I think it'd be better that way. And whatever reason that came around, like it was actually a really, you know, good thing that they did later down the line. But I grew up thinking that I was just really insecure. I was a really insecure kid, just never felt good enough, part of the crowd. If there was a group of people, you know, we were all friends. Like, obviously, they were better friends with each other than they were with me. I remember thinking, because in the Catholic schools, you know, there's a lot of these ritzy, like, Carolwood kind of types, you know, like, you know, like, sweater vests kind of crap, and I was, like, from Nassau, Lincoln, you know, I was, like, West Tampa, so it wasn't really, I felt like I didn't belong from the very get-go, and we were poor, you know, like, I don't remember ever getting new tennis shoes, you know what I mean, like, everybody else had new tennis shoes but me, and, so I just felt like I didn't belong, you know, and I played sports, like I tried to, you know, do the whole cheerleading thing, that didn't work out, like they didn't want me, I couldn't get my high kick high enough, I guess, like, so I started playing sports, so I found something I excelled in, and I was a smart kid, like I, you know, got good grades in school, and that was something I think that kept me out of a lot of trouble for a very long time, because I didn't start drinking until I was 18, so this was a whole bunch of, you know, stuff until I get there, but I do remember, like, trying to do bad things, because I really wanted to, like, experience badness in my life, I tried skipping school once around 13 years old. I was like, I'm going to do this, you know, because I was like, I was always afraid to do something bad. I had a very much like fear instilled into me from my mother because she was, you know, a little Hispanic lady, blonde hair, green eyes. I don't know what happened, but she's just like very mean and you give you the look and you better not do it. You know, she was one of those types, but, so I never did anything wrong, but I remember distinctly, 13 years old, I started hanging out with the cool kids on the bus, you know, they were talking about folk, you know, I was like, I don't know what that is, but I want to be a part of it, and so it's a gang, but, and I was like, I want to be in that, and then there was these other kids, and you can tell, they were like, it was kind of back in the day when, like, grunge was, like, really cool, and, you know, everybody listened to Blind Melon, or whatever it's called, and I was like, I'm going to do that and wear big t-shirts and I'm, you know, going to skip school with these kids. So I did. I got caught. It was nothing like surprising. I remember trying to smoke weed, you know, for the first time. And, it was like, I wasn't even lit. I don't even think like anything happened. And I was just like, I'm going to get high. And, nothing happened. So that's, you know, that was my experience, you know, my first experience trying to do something bad. So I got caught. My mom like questioned me like she always did. She was, one of those, I'm a private investigator without the license. And later then she got her license. So, so she always knew like what I was up to. And, but they divorced, you know, like I said, around 11, so I was kind of doing the whole seeing my dad on the weekends thing, and, you know, my father was always a really good father, you know, I can say, like, he was a horrible, horrible husband, but he was always a really good father. Anytime I would tell him that, you know, I was having a soccer game or a volleyball game or whatever, he'd always be there, like, no questions, always there. And, we would, you know, and he lived in Brandon, so I didn't really get to see him much at all. And even in his drinking, like, I really didn't see him. I have, like, a few memories of seeing him at rehab, you know, and I didn't know what that was. But it probably, you know, all through high school, you know, I was a really good kid. I got, like I said, I got good grades. I was, you know, honor roll, yada, yada. And then 17, I probably started to get a little rambunctious, you know, it's probably like a lot of teenage girls and their mom, you know, start getting in fights, and, you know, I felt like since I was doing so good that I should be kind of cut a little bit of slack, because I wasn't allowed to go to football games. I felt I was really sheltered, wasn't allowed to spend the night at my friend's house, you know, that kind of thing, and I was like, come on, you know, like, this is ridiculous. And so I started acting out a lot. Like, I started kind of talking back and throwing out these little bombs here and there, you know, because I was like a little feisty one. And my mom, and I would start running away, and I don't even know where I was going because I had nowhere to go. It's not like I had a lot of friends, you know, and if they were my friend, they lived, you know, North Tampa, so I wasn't going to their house to take the bus. And so I didn't really have, you know, I remember going, you know, running away once and sitting on the top of my roof watching my parents actually look around the neighborhood for me. And I was just like, ha ha, you know, like, you suck, I hate you, keep looking for me, you know, not thinking of like, God, my parents are like so worried, you know, wondering where I am. But I was just, you know, I was just a very, I mean, I think, you know, the whole sports and the grades and everything was kind of like, I made that my identity. And because I did that so much, like, it kept me out of a lot of trouble too. So I was always doing something after school or staying late to do, you know, homework. And I don't even know how I ever slept, because I would sleep 3 hours and, you know, do my homework all night and go to school the next day. Like, I could not survive doing that today. And it was probably around my first drink, other than like the few times I remember trying to be bad, was around 17, 18. It was when I just graduated high school, and my grandparents, they had this little condo that they rented as like a celebration thing, and, you know, we didn't have Smirnoffs back then. We had Zimas, and Zimas were really popular, and you put your little Jolly Rancher, I know someone else could relate, and you put your little Jolly Rancher in there, and then they become a flavor, and it's like spectacular, you know, it's like, ooh, you know, you're hot crap, you know, now. And try not to cuss, okay? It's very hard for me. And so it was like the Zimas were really popular, and it was like my first night away from my parents, even though I was technically still with my grandparents. My cousin, he was a drug dealer, you know, trying to be his, I don't know. And he's sober now today, which is really cool. But he was a drug dealer, and of course, you know, he brought all the fun stuff. So I'm like remembering that, oh my God, he has a 12-pack of Zima, and he has some other stuff that's going to be like so awesome. And that was the first night I ever drank. I don't even remember drinking but two Zimas. And I smoked cigarettes, smoked the other stuff, and took something else, and I just don't remember anything after that. But there was a few things, like, and that's just like from the very get-go, like don't start with one beer or anything, you know, it's just right for balls to the wall, you know, and that's how my drinking continued for the rest of my, like, days, was just always, you know, from zero to finish line, pass out, blackout, and call it a day. And embarrassing stuff always happened, just like, you know, Alexis was saying, you know, thanks for speaking, by the way, you did a great job. And always embarrassing, you know, like I was waking up, had no idea of what I did the night before, you know, it's always like, wake up. And then it's just like, oh, you know, people will tell me what I did, and I'm just like, oh, that wasn't that bad. And they're like, oh, yeah, it was, you know, like, oh, yeah, we don't even want you in our house anymore, like, get out. And that's just story. It wasn't pretty. I always wanted to be like that classy drinker, you know, where you go to Blue Martini, or that's what my idea of classy was. Let's just get real. Going to Blue Martini, drinking a margarita, and meet a rich guy, take me on a plane. That was like, you know, like, that was what was going to happen, you know, and it never did. I was always like, oh, this martini isn't strong enough, and I just drink straight vodka because that was faster, and then I don't remember anything, and so that's always how it went. But this particular time, going back to, you know, that little after graduation experience, my first real night drinking, there was one thing that I do remember distinctly was that my cousin and his girlfriend, which later became one of my best friends, kind of running buddy, they started arguing, like knives kind of came into the picture, you know, just like how, you know, memories of the youngin days. And they were running around yelling and screaming. I don't know why my grandparents slept through all that and it messed. So, but I remember clearly thinking, like, you know, that I don't care what happens, like, with that. Like, I just, alcohol gave me the ability to just not care about anything. And my little sister was crying, just like how she used to cry, and when my parents would fight. And, you know, I was just like, I'm going to bed, you know, good night. And I just didn't care. And I went to sleep, and that's how everything always went. Like, I just did not care about anything. I stopped caring about me. Like, I stopped caring about my family. Like, I had a horrible relationship with my family at the end of my drinking. And my little sister hated me. I used to tell, like, you know, I remember things that I told my mom, like, I hated her since the day I was born. Like, and I remember telling my sister awful things to the degree of, like, my father wasn't, you know, proud of her, and, like, she didn't love my father anyway, and, like, why does she care that he died? And, like, really awful, awful things. And my sister the other day on my Facebook, everybody's on Facebook, but she, like, wrote this message, you know, I love you to the moon and back. And I was just like, wow, you know, for a girl to say, who hated me with a passion, who I almost ran over with my car once, you know, to say that kind of stuff to me, it means a lot, you know, because it shows that I've changed a lot, and I've, you know, earned that love back after all the things I did to her and my family. And she hated the way I treated my mom and my, you know, everybody in my family. And so that was a big part of it too. But another thing that, you know, alcohol did for me was that it kind of just numbed everything. Like, I know everybody can, a lot of people can relate with that, but it just kind of numbed just me. I just didn't want to live life. I just kind of didn't even want to exist. I never had enough guts to kill myself, so I was always just like, I'll just get wasted, you know, and it was fun for a while. Like, I had a good time for a while, like, in the beginning, but it just always got worse, you know. And drugs also a part of my story, and it got me quicker, but it got me here quicker. But in the end, like, I was just drinking alcohol, you know. Like, I did a dabble here and there. And, you know, my old sponsor used to always say, like, you know, alcohol or drugs did something to me and alcohol did something for me. And I always related with that because, you know, I always felt different when I drank. Like, I always felt like, not that I was, like, prettier. Well, I did feel that, I guess. I always felt, you know, like I had more self-esteem. Like I felt, you know, I did feel better about myself. I felt like, you know, I was on top of the world. I could do things. If I was, like, you know, getting fired from my job, which would probably happen every other, you know, couple months is usually how it went. You know, I'd be like, oh, I just got fired. But you know what? Tomorrow's another day and I'm going to get that job. And like, I'm going to get a new job. You know, alcohol was giving me this courage, like everything was going to be okay. And it made me feel okay because I definitely, without drinking, felt broken because that's what I was. And I always had, you know, hostages, like a lot of people say. Like, there was always a guy in the life that took care of me. It was like, you know, the one number one, the one number two, the one number three, you know. It was always like any boyfriend I thought, like, I was going to marry, have babies, and, like, live happily ever after because they were my solution. And I was always looking for something to fill that hole. And it was always guys, you know, like drugs, alcohol, shopping, money. I mean, you name it, food, because I developed an eating disorder. It was always anything to just kind of feed that part of me that was missing. And, you know, nothing ever made it better. It was just a continuous, like, ending, you know, endless thing. Just nothing ever filled it. And so around 21, I got diagnosed with breast cancer. And that was a big shock to me, obviously, and big shock to anybody in their 20s or below. But I had to go through, like, treatments, and that was probably a huge turning point that I started really questioning my drinking. Like, I knew I always drank abnormal because, I mean, nobody just drinks till they black out. I mean, I didn't know that was abnormal, but I didn't think it was normal either. But I started to notice certain things, like I wouldn't ask my doctors if drinking was okay on chemotherapy. You know, like, you think if you're not supposed to drink on antibiotics, it's probably not so good to drink on chemotherapy. And I was like, you have a reverse effect, you know. And I was so afraid to ask them, but I didn't want them to tell me, like, no, it's not okay, you know. And that's probably what they would say, no, it's not okay. So I never asked. And I was fully aware that by not asking, I could be risking my life, and I was okay with that, you know, because I wasn't going to lose the thing that mattered most to me, and that was alcohol. You know, it wasn't my life, it was alcohol. Like, that made me feel better. And so I went through all the treatments, you know. I started to lose my hair, and I was still drinking every single day, blacking out every single night. And there was a funny story, you know, that happened. Well, it wasn't funny then, but it is funny now. And but it was one of those nights where I'm fighting with the one number one, and he was like, I don't know, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and we were fighting because that's what we do at 3 o'clock in the morning. He probably made me leave the bar, and I was pissed, you know. And we're driving through West Chase, and it's like, you know, we're probably going like 35 miles an hour, 40 miles an hour. And I was like, you know, I can't stand you. Pull over the car. Like, I'm getting out, you know. And he's like, absolutely not. I'm not leaving you in the middle of nowhere. And I was like, you know, get on my face. Like, obviously, you don't understand. Like, if you don't stop the freaking car, like, I'm jumping out. And, you know, I had this vision that I'd be able to jump out and just keep running, you know, into the woods away from him. And that didn't happen. So I jump out. You know, try to explain that to your cancer doctors the next day. So I jump out. You know, like I have no hair. I have a wig on. Okay, and the wig just shoots off like a rocket after you hit the floor. So I'm tumbling, you know, he runs over my shoe because it went under the car and he thought he ran me over. So he's like freaking out after he stopped and I'm like, you know, 20 yards away. I'm looking for my wig, you know, I'm bleeding everywhere, like head, like from my shoulders all the way down to my back. We were just talking about road rash earlier and I had like the whole skin was missing and my head had these two huge lumps, you know, and I thought my skull came. And I was like, God, this sucks, you know, like, this sucks to go out like this. And, but my first thought was like the whole, you know, alcoholic thought, like, oh my God, someone's going to see me without my wig. Like, I was like, let me hurry up and find it. So I'm trying to like put my wig on over these two lumps on my head. And, that wasn't, you know, working out. So, and he's like, and it's a tumbleweed, by the way, like, cause it went with me. So it was just like this big ball of hay and I'm trying to put it on my head. I'm like, God bless me if I could just have had a video of that. And, he comes screaming and he's like, oh my God, you know, I can't believe it. Are you okay? And I'm just like, oh, skirt, you know, like F you. Take me to the hospital. Like, still pissed, you know what I mean? Like, nothing's going to ruin my night. I'm going to still be mad at you. And that's how my drinking went. Like, anytime I've ever been in the hospital, besides now, you know, it's been drinking. And, you know, the other time I, like, you know, broke a lava lamp in the bathroom. And he's like, get out of the bathroom, you know, like, you're going to cut yourself. And I'm just like, F you know, like usual. And then I sliced my foot on, you know, the glass and, you know, cut it. An artery. like FML, you know. So here I am in the hospital again, you know, we got a bleeder, you know, and like, and I'm cracking jokes like, oh, doesn't the blood match my toenail polish? Like, and they're just like, God, this stupid drunk girl, you know, like no idea. And I always tried to, and that, God, that was my life. Like, God, that sucks, you know? And I just went through my drinking like that, you know, just patching it up. And I, you know, my mom was an enabler, you know, any time I would run back when the hole got deep enough, you know, I would run back. I don't have any money. I lost my job. I hit another telephone pole, you know? And I would run back and she'd fix my car, pay my bills, you know, I'd get back on my feet. I'd move out again, you know, and I'd start the whole process all over again until I hit another bottom and had to move back in. And it was just insanity, you know, like doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. And they were always the same results. And so it kind of came to a point where it was probably around 24, like I started looking for things, like other outside things that would make me feel better, like better stuff, you know, like not the sex and the drugs and the rock and roll thing, you know, but I mean, I didn't listen to rock and roll, but it was more of like, you know, church and Deepak Chopra or like anything to make me feel better about myself. And I started going to church and, you know, trying to listen, and I remember envying them and looking at all those people, and they'd go to, you know, Sunday mass and they'd leave and they'd hug everybody and they'd all be all smiles and lit up their eyes. There was always something about their eyes, you know, like they had that look in their eyes, that glitter, you know, that gleam. And I would be like, God, why can't I feel that? Like, why can't I be like them? And I always wanted to believe and I couldn't. But I would continue to go. And I remember, like, going, I even went to Bible study, okay? I even got baptized again. My mom was like, oh, you got baptized Baptist? Like, we're done with you. And, I mean, but she came to my baptism at 24. And, embarrassing. But, I mean, that's good. You know, I was trying. You know, I was trying. And you know, it didn't work for me because, you know, it wasn't Alcoholics Anonymous, and because I had a drinking, you know, drinking was part of my problem, you know, and I had that spiritual malady and they couldn't relate to that. I remember telling her, like, well, what do you do, like, on the weekends? And she's just telling me, like, oh, well, we don't drink or anything or go out. And I'm like, what? Like, you don't go out to clubs? You don't drink? Like, you don't, you know, like, date? Like, they're like, oh, no. And I'm just like, like, wow, yeah, I can't do this. See ya. And I couldn't do that, you know. So I never went back after that when she told me she couldn't, you know, that she didn't drink. And I was like, well, you know, that's my life. And that was, it became my culture. Like, that's all I did was I lived in a bar. And so I did, my aunt got sober. And that's my dad's side of the family is like run rampant with alcoholism. It's like everybody has it, besides my grandmother. She was like the only one. And they've all like gone through the jails, institutions, and death. Like my dad died when I was 18. He died of a heroin overdose. And I was living with him at the time, which I'm very blessed that I got that chance because it was one of my... like another dispute I had with my mom, and I ended up running away, so I moved in with my dad. And so I lived with him for about 4 months until he passed. And I'm really thankful, and I have a lot of, like, when I got sober, I had a lot of remorse and guilt and shame because a lot of the things I did while I lived with my dad, because it was, like, no rules, party house, you know. And even after he died, like, I continued to live there and do those things, and I had a lot of guilt about that. And, but anyway, that was, you know, another thing too, like, I mean, with that whole family, like, they dropped like flies, jails, institutions, and death, and, like, my cousin went to jail, and he almost died several times, and, you know, so did I. And, so anyway, my aunt gets sober, and she's kind of starting to hint the whole, you know, AA thing. And she gave me a book one day when I had one of my escapades, and I was like lying there crying, I'm going to die and kill myself, you know, which was a regular occurrence, you know, even into sobriety for a while, unfortunately. And a lot of people remember that. I was like weekend suicide attempt, you know, as anything, you know, abnormal. And because I didn't get happy for like a long time, like the miracle didn't happen for a very long time for me. And so, you know, she gets sober. She probably had about 2 years. She starts, like, giving me, well, you know, the whole, like, little, you know, why don't you just try not drinking, you know? Like, do you think drinking could be a problem? Like, And I was like, you know, and I knew she was right. Like, I knew that, you know, there was something abnormal about my drinking compared to others. And my friend and I used to joke all the time, like, oh, we're a bunch of alcoholics, let's, you know, think about this over some drinks, ha, ha, ha. And we thought it was just a big joke, but deep down, like, I knew there was something wrong with me. I just didn't understand what that was. You know, I knew I drank abnormal, but I didn't know that that was, like, I didn't know about the spiritual malady, or, you know, I didn't know about, you know, the, just like any time I put alcohol into my body, that all of a sudden that it just kicks in, you know, that obsession. And, you know, like, I can't even think anymore today. I'm so tired. Sorry. But, like, I just didn't know what my problem was. And so when I got here and, like, people started explaining that, these things to me, it was like a huge epiphany for me to understand finally that there wasn't something wrong with me, that I was just an alcoholic, you know. And so she started, you know, she gave me a big book, and, you know, I used that as my coaster for, like, a few months. And, you know, I was still around 24, and then, you know, I turned 25, and I started having, like, this midlife crisis midway before my midlife, you know. And I was just like, what am I doing with my life? This is, like, the whole what happened. And I'm just like, what did I do with my life? You know, I'm, like, not married. All my friends are married, you know, like, they have kids. They've graduated from college. Like, I've just felt like this whole time I've been stagnant. You know, like, I just don't care about anything. I have no goals. You know, I had so much potential, and I was just having, it was New Year's Eve, because my sobriety date is January 2nd, and it was, you know, nothing spectacular about that night. I mean, we did the same thing we always did. We went out drinking, and, you know, the night before, like, the guy I was dating, he kicked me out of his house and told me to get honest with myself about my drinking, which I was, like, appalled. You know, it's like, how could this guy, you know, like, and he drinks with me all the time, you know, and I was just like, gosh, the nerve of this kid. But I had to do that whole walk of shame, you know, and I started to think, like, you know, like, this is what my life's come to. Like, I just hate myself. I hate everything about me. You know, I hate the people that I hang out with. I had no real friends, you know, none of my family. Like, I was living back with my mom again, and that was, like, you know, complete failure to me. And at 25 years old, which is nothing wrong with that. That's just how I felt. And, you know, I remember looking in the mirror and wanting to kill myself. And I looked in my eyes, and my eyes looked completely black to me. Like, I felt like I had no soul, and I was dead. And that's really how I was, you know. And, you know, the great thing about AA is, like, you know, I heard, like, you know, another speaker say, like, it brings people back to life. And it really did that for me. And, but anyway, I got on my knees that night, New Year's Eve, and I asked God to please help me and, you know, just take away 1 second of the craziness in my head, because I felt literally like I was going crazy. Not that, you know, I still didn't think I had a drinking problem, but I felt like I was actually going mentally insane. And I just wanted 1 second of peace in my head, just 1 second, you know. And I remember saying, not 1 hour, not 1 day, not a week, just 1 second, you know, of peace. And, you know, and 5 minutes later, like, you know, my best friend calls me and we're off to the races again. Like, how quick I forget, you know, how bad it was. And so, you know, we went out that night, but it was different that night. There was this whole, you know, mental clarity. Like, I remember a moment of clarity. I just, you know, couldn't get drunk enough, like, for it to stop. Like, my brain was just going and going and going. And, you know, I saw people's reactions this time of how, you know, my best friend was drinking, because she was just like me. You know, she's, you know, like, doing all these inappropriate things, you know, and making out with all these guys and trying to get her picture in the paper, because it was the Hard Rock, you know, New Year's Eve, which we did get our picture in the paper, you know. And, you know, but because of her. And so it was just like I saw the look of disgust, though, like in everybody's eyes of how she was acting. And I was like, God, that's how they look at me, you know, like that's exactly how they look at me. And I remember just like I just felt that like utter disgust and, you know, discontent with myself and like, what am I doing? And the next day, you know, I continued drinking, and it was New Year's Day. And, you know, that's when my parents decided to do their intervention, you know, nice family holiday. And my dad said the family intervention. Yeah. And my cousin was the one that brought it up first, you know, like, I'm really, you know, worried about your drinking. And I'm like, you're my drug dealer, you know, like, what are you talking about? And, but, I mean, they were like, well, you know, we were thinking, like, we want you to go to treatment. We'd really like you to go. And I was like, well, you know, this is a good time. Like, I'm not working. Quit my job. You know, I have nothing else to do. Might as well go to treatment. And so I did. And it was kind of like, and it's kind of funny, you know, coincidence that it was just the day after I asked God to help me, you know, and he provided me with that help that I wanted, because deep in my soul, like, I really wanted to be, you know, to change. I wanted to be different. And, you know, I wanted better things for me, and I wanted God in my life, even though I was so pissed at him. Like, I was so angry at God and myself and everybody, because it was always everybody else's fault. It was never my fault. I was a victim. You know, I'm a victim. Yeah, life. And that's how I thought for a long, long time, that I was the victim. And God was responsible for me having cancer. God was responsible for my dad dying and for my mom being a whatever she is. And, you know, and it was just like, I was so angry. And but I did go to treatment. I went to Turning Point. They said go to a meeting every single day. Well, I had no choice because I was in treatment. But I remember, like, putting on a nice, pretty outfit to go to treatment because I'm going to get help for my alcoholism. And, like, I had no idea what I was in for. And they told me I couldn't do my hair, I couldn't match my clothes, and I couldn't call anybody. And I immediately started crying every single day. And I was like, I hate my life. Why did I do this? And, but it was like the best thing for me, and they introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and so they made me get a sponsor. I started working the steps. They told me to get a home group and start meeting people, start building a support network. I was always bargaining. Like, you told me, like, get 5 numbers a day. I'm gonna get 3. You know, because I want some control over it. And I think I know better. I'm like, well, 5 is a lot. You know, how about 3? And they're just like, no. And but it really made me get some friends. And, you know, I never knew what to say. So I'd be like, you know, they told me to call you. And, you know, the other person would always just take over. And, you know, I started, and they would always talk about themselves. I remember, like, Tiffany was one of the first people that started calling me. I'll throw you out there. But she would always call and talk about herself. And I'm like, like, what is wrong with this girl? Like, I remember having, like, conversations with my sponsor about this. Like, why is she talking about herself all the time? Like, what about me? You know, like, I'm the one with the problem here. You know, she was a couple years sober. And I was like, I had no idea that she was trying to identify with me. Like, she was trying to tell, you know, me about herself so I could relate. And so anyway, to kind of speed things up, but I was, you know, it took about a year and a half. You know, I went to meetings every day for about 2.5 years. And, you know, my sponsor, like, would always tell me, don't leave until the miracle happens. Because I was just like, I feel like I'm not getting better, you know. Like, I'm still miserable. I still hate myself. Like, you know, I remember almost getting Baker acted at 9 months sober. Like, I mean, it's not abnormal around here. And, you know, because I was always like, oh, I just want to die. You know, it's so dramatic. Like, I just want to die. I just hate my life, you know. Like, nothing's good, like, in my life. And, you know, she's just, like, keep doing the right next thing, you know. And so I started, you know, just doing what she said. And, like, I did the next right thing. I started going back to school because that's what she told me to do. And, you know, at first it wasn't, like, such good grades. And, like, eventually it started getting a little bit better, you know. And through, like, the last, I've been sober for a little over 6 years now. You know, I started going back to school around a year. And, you know, I got to graduate. Like, I actually got to get, like, a completion of a degree. You know, it's like I always would start things and just stop because that was, like, notorious. I never finished anything in my life. And that's awesome. Okay. Someone just flipped me off. But anyway, but so it was just, you know, like, you finish and you start. And it was through, like, going to meetings and, you know, sitting through a meeting, not leaving till it was over. And, you know, and that's how I learned to actually go to school and not leave until it was over, you know. And I remember, like, my, you know, first sponsor, Morgan, she'd get up in the morning at, like, 5:30 in the morning and go to work. And I'd be like, oh, my God, I'm never going to do that, you know. And little did I know, like, here I am getting up at 4:30 in the morning going to clinicals, you know, for school. And, you know, I got to experience that. And the fear that of not being able to perform was so intense. Like, I had to pray, like, every morning in the bathroom several times a day, you know, to just be able to function, you know, because I was so afraid of messing up, you know. And, you know, other benefits of sobriety, like, AA is responsible for every single thing I have in my life, you know, like, gave me the relationship I have with God today. Like, I really feel like God's created a masterpiece out of my life, you know, like, he's given me everything, and he's taken away all those feelings that I have of lack of self-worth and, like, that I hate myself, and he's filled that hole that I never thought could be filled, you know. And, you know, and it still comes back. Like, I still, like, today I was like, oh, I want to suck, you know, and, like, because I do not like speaking. And that's, you know, okay, there's lots of other things I can do. But I'll do what I'm told. Like, I've always been told you always say yes to AA. And, you know, I definitely try to do that as much as I can. And, you know, I worked 2 jobs today. Like, I wouldn't even been able to show up to one, you know, before. And, you know, I got to get married in sobriety to a wonderful husband, you know. And, like, he treats me like I'm a princess. And, like, I never, like, thought that would be possible. And, you know, like, to all these girls, you know, that I've known, you know, for, like, ever since I got sober. Like, I mean, it's great to have friends like that in my life today that have actually, like, I mean, they bend over backwards for you. Like, I remember, like, calling, you know, like, one of them, and she doesn't even remember, but just, and I was, like, 6 months sober, and she left work to be with me, you know, because I was so crazy. And you get to watch other people's lives change. You get to sponsor girls, you know, and you get to see that light come on in their eyes. And, you know, like, that's, like, the miracle that goes on here. Like, I can't say enough about AA. And, like, you know, with God, like, you know, I just end with talking about that. And I used to shut, like, cringe at the thought of hearing God because I was just so, like, pissed off. And I know. And I was so mad. And my sponsor would just say, like, you know, just, just get on your knees and ask God, you know, to not be so mad at him anymore. And I was like, well, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. And, you know, and I prayed that prayer every morning, every night for 2 weeks straight. And I woke up one morning and that was my first experience with a spiritual awakening. That resentment of 25 years of God, you know, at God was gone and I couldn't explain it. And I get to, you know, build my relationship with him, you know, from, you know, a good foundation. And today it's grown into something like completely, you know, magical. Like, I feel like I can, you know, I really have touched this, you know, some part of an energy, you know, of doing right and practicing the principles and all of my affairs, which is very hard to do. And so that's what I try to do on a daily basis now. But Red Door was one of the first meetings like I went to at Friday and Saturday nights at 11 o'clock. And I wanted to throw that out there for you. And that was one of the meetings I used to go to when I was just so crazy. And, you know, like I got to get honest and throw all my shit on the table and, you know, just, you know, let you guys help me. So I'm just really grateful, you know, for Stephen asking me to speak tonight. Like I said, I'll do anything for AA since it's given everything to me. So it's the least I can do is give it a little back. But thanks for listening, and I hope you guys have a great night.
I have asked Lindsay to read Dr. Boslaw's message.